ESPN Sports Radio 1300, broadcasting live from the Mingy Beef Jerky Studios.
Mingy Beef Jerky, you'll love it as much as we do.
This is WLXG AM Lexington.
Well, champion Steve won the boys, a side of 12 two-year winners, two stakes winners, and a third to place in graded stakes in his first crop to race this year. Made to Love You broke her maiden at Santa Anita, then was a four-length winner of the $100,000 moccasin stakes at Santa Anita. Also competing in California, a run Stevie Run has won the Affleberg Stakes, and Starship Flair has posted back-to-back wins at Calder, went west, and then finished second, beating a nose in a Grade 3 Mies Stakes at Hollywood Park. And in addition to those 12 winners, nine others have placed. No question about it, Stevie Wonderboy is sighing runners. The champion two-year-old of his year, Stevie Wonderboy, is to stand the 2012 season for $5,000 live foal. In stakes last weekend, undefeated Trickmeister, a four-year-old Copa Proud Citizen, won the Harlan's Holiday Stakes at Gulfstream. He's won three stakes in a row. The others were at Saratoga and at Delaware. Salva, winner of an Eclipse Award and a son of Gone West. Proud Citizen stands for $7,500 live foal at Mr. and Mrs. Brereton C. Jones Airdrie Stud. Breeding incentives are available, if I can say it. Breeding incentives are available. That's a heck of a start. Oh, well. Check the website at AirdrieStud.com, and you can check those breeding incentives on the website. And remember, the Airdrie Stallions are your key to racing profit.
Horse Tales with Ursel Ellis from the horse capital of the world, Bluegrass Country. Horse Tales is all about the horses, the people, and the history of the thoroughbred industry. Now here's your host, Ursel Ellis.
Good morning, everyone, on this Christmas Eve morning. And we're doing things a little bit differently today. Well, Dr. Byers and Michael Bowen are here. That's not different. But Jackie's here and I'm here and Ressie's there. Yeah, well, pardon?
I said it's odd and unusual.
Well, it's odd and unusual. But anyway, during the second hour of the show, we're going to do a reading of Old Pastures by John Tanner Foote. And it was written back in about 1913, I think it was.
Isn't that almost right? 100 years old. Isn't that amazing? But
right at it, 100 years old. And anyway.
Was there when they published it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, just checking.
I'm the boy in the story. Anyway, we're going to try to hit that at about maybe 11:20, 11:25. Runs about 25 minutes. But anyway, it's a great story, and Foote was a very superb writer, and he wrote the story of about the, which coined the phrase of look of eagles. So anyway,
in the movie Kentucky,
yeah,
that ancient thing that was so good with
That the screenplay was taken from the book from that short story. Yeah.
Well, several of his short stories are in there. They folded in a couple of them. But we like to do it because of all our friends in the horse rescue business. It's that kind of
story. And it's about a horse rescue. So listen to it. I think you'll like it, even with me reading it. Let's see. 1958 two-year-olds were doing intentionally. He was the third highweight, co-third highweight, I should say, with Dunce. Intentionally was by... Intent Dunce was a son of Tom Fool, very well named son of Tom Fool, by the way. And, of course, we got Jackie's announcements coming up, but right now we're going to go to, because they're over there, they're already fussing about wanting to get out of here.
They are not.
Dr. Byers
not.
And Michael Blowen.
Ho, ho, ho. We are
yeah,
not.
Merry yeah. Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
We're your captive audience.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I know I've got two listeners. That's good. How's everything this morning?
Good. Everything's good, Ursel. We got a lot of visitors coming to Old Friends. We had a really nice family from India that came earlier this week, and the father and the mother and the daughter were all studying at Duke.
Is that
I
right?
Didn't hold that against them.
Wow.
Oh, they're from India.
Mm-hmm.
Did you tell them about our little girl from India that we had in the jockey school?
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty unusual.
I sent them over there. I told them to go over there and see. And then they were going to go over to the horse park. They're very interested in the horse, and they were very, very nice and very generous. So we're having tours at Old Friends. If anybody wants to come out during the Christmas holidays, we'd love to have them. Our gift shop is still open. If anybody needs some last-minute gift items, 502-863-1775 for the little person in your life or the big person, whatever it is.
I think Michael would give a tour during Armageddon.
Yeah, exactly. Hurry!
Hurry up. We only got 8 minutes.
Doc's mic on.
8 minutes to go.
Test it a little bit there.
Let's see some horses before we all go. Yep.
Here. What are you going to give the horses for Christmas?
We're going to give them extra carrots. You should see all the stuff they got in the mail.
Oh.
I got a great card from Mary Sullivan. Well, I didn't get the card. Curious Clown got it. Mary Sullivan, of course, owns the horse Get Stormy, ran in the Breeders' Cup. So the card had a picture of Get Stormy. You know, Get Stormy won the big race over at Keeneland. And he's a grandson. He's out of a Curious Clown mare.
Oh,
so she sent a picture of Get Stormy and an apology to Curious Clown because they didn't put him on the lead in the Breeders' Cup, and she called it a humiliation, but she promised to do better in 2012 with Get Stormy. Let him go to the lead and
great.
Let everybody else try to catch him. Quit telling him what to do.
What's Get Stormy by? Okay.
I don't know.
I'm getting a blank look over here. All right.
I don't know. I'm only interested in the bloodlines that connect. I think you're probably right.
What was it about, Doc?
I think he might be Stormy Atlantic, but I'm not sure.
Oh,
that sounds like a good name.
Yeah,
Doctor,
I don't know. I only
want to check your stock in coming off. Oh, coming through very good. Try him again.
Have to share with Michael.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
All right, I'll get done really quick, and then we can get some important information.
You want some breath mints?
We want him
to have breath mints.
Just what he wanted for Christmas, a little closeness. But it would be great to have people come over. Marquetry is doing really well, recovering from his surgery. He's going out now, and he looks really, really good. And I have to keep my fingers crossed, but all the horses look absolutely terrific.
Yeah,
we're very, very, very lucky.
The little horse that we're trying to save had a little setback yesterday. He was really coming along good. And Jackie had to put one up yesterday to put the mare she's got out there. We've got to keep shoes on her because she has bad feet and in front anyway, and had to put her in to put a shoe on. I guess he stirred around a little bit, and yesterday afternoon he was off considerably more, but he looked, Jackie, when I went down this morning, he looked better.
Good.
Yeah, so.
As long as
hey, we're all a little ouchy at a certain age.
Well, his.
You grow numb after a while.
Pasture joint's just a mucky mess.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Well, most of ours have certain war injuries that they, you know, especially the really good ones because they competed for so long and competed so successfully and gave their all. And so, you know, they're the ones that end up the ones that we have that didn't do anything like leave Seattle, Ed Bum. You know, he didn't do anything. He gets around fine.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't never been broken. He never been broken, has he?
Who? Leave Seattle?
Seattle, yeah.
Yeah, he ran three times at Hollywood Park.
Oh. I'm thinking about the rescue horse from New York.
Oh, Escape from New York.
Escape from New York.
Hard to come up with his name, isn't it? Escape from New York, yes. What about him?
Well, he hadn't even been broke, has he?
No.
Well, that's wasn't what I was talking about.
No. Okay. I'm the only one in this group that's broke.
Oh, no, you're not. Get in line. have you heard about the movie War Horse?
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. They had a guy, I saw an interview with the star, and he said the horses are phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's the horse that's a star, or one of them had been in Seabiscuit, they mentioned.
Rusty Hendrickson, who's the wrangler on Seabiscuit, is also the wrangler in this movie. He's the best horse guy around for the movies. And we have there's a photographer, Matt Woolley and his wife Wendy have Equisports Photography. They take a lot of the great photographs that we have at our fabulous old friend's gift shop at 1841 Paint Depot Road, 502-863-1775. Anyway, they have some fabulous photographs there. But she had a horse that she rescued, and she took a photograph of him, and Steven Spielberg loved the photograph of the horse. So when they made the War Horse caps that he gave all the cast and crew, that's her horse on the cap.
Oh, is that right? Isn't that great?
And they're trying to figure out some way I'm trying to figure out with Wendy some way that we can exploit that and connect it to old friends in some kind of financially remunerative way.
That's your gig. That's your thing.
I guess I'm trying to figure this out by that clock over, but I think
it's time.
Is it time
for a commercial?
All right. I think, you know, I haven't figured
he's
that
the master of the easy segue, isn't he?
Ian, Captain Kangaroo.
If you want professional radio, go upstairs, will you? Okay.
We have a professional, Ressi.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't use his real name on the show.
We have one professional in this room, and that's Ressi, and that's right. Well, December 18th at Gulfstream, the $100,000 Dania Beach Stakes was won by Summerfront, a two-year-old colt by Warfront. Bred in Kentucky by Grace Field Breeding and sold at Keenan's April two-year-old in training sale for $475,000. Summerfront is undefeated in three starts. He won his first start at Belmont, then the King Cougat Stakes at Aqueduct. Warfront is also the sire of the highly promising two-year-old State of Play, a grade two stakes winner at Saratoga, and of grade one placed two-year-old filly Emerald Gold. In his first crop, now three-year-olds, Warfront has sired 10 stakes horses, 8 stakes winners, 4 graded, including grade one stakes winner Summer Soiree, that name again, same horse, won 3 graded stakes anyway. Won 3 graded stakes this year, including the grade one Del Mar Oaks, and The Factor, I didn't pronounce that one, also winner of 3 2011 graded stakes, including the grade one Pat O'Brien. The Factor set a new track record at Santa Anita, 6 furlongs in 106-4. I just thought I'd throw that in. 106-4. Wow, that's downhill, isn't it? Well, Warfront, a son of Danzig, stands at Claiborne Farm for $60,000 due on the foal stands and nurses. Inquiries to Bernie Sams and see the website at claibornefarm.com. Here are two names to remember in the horse business, the Clay Ward Agency and Indian Creek. The Clay Ward Agency, founded in 1931 by James Clay Ward, had been providing the finest in equine insurance for some 80 years. Success was based on hard work, dedication, attention to detail, great service, and a thorough knowledge of the horse business. Quality still carried on today. Whatever your insurance needs, if it pertains to the thoroughbred, the professionals at the Clay Ward Agency are positioned to supply the best coverage at the best price available. Give Shaq Parrish, Bruce Isaacs, or John Hess a call, 987-1861, or stop by the office at 1102 Main Street in Parrish. Ask about the services available also at Indian Creek, where many of the major stakes winners, both here and abroad, first saw the light of day. Indian Creek has raised, boarded, and sold many of the world's finest thoroughbreds, and the Clay Ward Agency has insured many of the world's finest thoroughbreds. Indian Creek and the Clay Ward Agency, that's a winning combination. Well, last Sunday at the fairgrounds, the Letellier Memorial Stakes was won by Good Deeds, a two-year-old filly by Broken Vow. Good Deeds is one of 17 2011 two-year-old winners by Broken Vow. 5 of the 17 have won a place in stakes, including New York stakes winner Lady Cohiba. Broken Vow is the sire of 22 stakes horses this year. That bears repeating, 22 stakes horses this year. Listed among the 22, multiple grade one stakes winner Sassy Image, graded stakes winners Jimma Nator, and Broken Dreams. Now, the record speaks for itself. If you want a runner in your racing stable, just look to Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud for 25,000 live foal. That's the home also of Bob and John, Cowboy Cal, and Sky Classic. Bob and John is 16 two-year-old winners, including a stakes winner in his first crop this year. He stands for $7,500 live foal. First foals by Cowboy Cal, a multiple graded stakes winner millionaire by Giants Causeway, arrived this year. He also stands for $7,500 live foal. And Champion Sky Classics, our 59 stakes winner, stands for $10,000 live foal. Inquiries at Clifford Berry or Nancy Stevens, and see the website at pinoakstud.com. All righty. Moving right along.
All right, I got two more things to say.
Michael Braun has two more things to say. Of course, you know, it takes him an hour and a half to say two things.
It was nice to see Liaison, that son of Indian Charlie, win the Bonaparte Stakes.
Boy, that's that's salt in the wound, isn't it?
Boy.
Talk into your mic here, Mike. Michael, because I see that I'm watching this computer over here. That's fascinating.
Right. Oh, there you go.
Hey, you're right. Oh, you're just like
of course,
that,
the Bonaparte Stakes was named after our horse Bonaparte, a retiree. So he was up there very proud. And
now, how old is he?
He is, I believe he's about 17.
Is that right?
17?
Mm-hmm. And then I also wanted to thank Del Hancock over at Claiborne Farm because she had a couple of the people from Claiborne, really nice guys, come over yesterday and plant a birch tree in our cemetery in memory of Noor.
Nice.
Who was by?
Yeah,
really. Who was by?
He's by Nesrula.
Hey, you got it right this week.
You're worse than Dr. Bios. He goes, now, this is the part of the stethoscope that goes in your ears. I go, thank you. I remember that from last week, too.
Well.
But anyway, I want to thank Del and everybody at Claiborne for sending over. It's a beautiful birch tree, and I think it's going to grow nicely, and it was a gift, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah, a birch tree. I wonder where they keep, you know, where they grow them over there. They got a grove or something? Or is it
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's beautiful. I mean, and it's
It
was a good-sized planting tree. I mean, it wasn't a little seedling or something.
Yeah.
I mean, they came in there, and it was a little hefty.
Oh.
So I
imagine they brought it over and planted it for you.
Yes, they did. Yeah. I didn't have to do anything but point.
Is that right?
Said, I'd like it there. And the guy said, well, I'm not sure. The roots of that tree, he knew what he was doing. You know,
yeah,
I mean, it wasn't hey, I pointed it in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
But anyway, moved it over a few feet, and it looks nice. He gave us instructions. And
Very
Dale, generous. And that's
I'm very fond of really Dale. Nice. Dale's a lovely person.
Yep, there you go. Well, we really appreciate the tree. And okay, those are my two things.
All right. All right, we're going to turn it over to Doc.
Well, I'll put in a Del Hancock remark.
Go ahead.
She always does what's right for the horse and what's right for the horse industry, no matter what. And,
that's the
horse is first.
Yeah.
The horse is first.
Yeah.
And that, you know, so she's just a star.
Yeah, she is, isn't she?
She really is.
Yeah, I like the whole family as far as that goes. Seth and Arthur, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
they're not a whole lot alike, those two, but but they're both really nice guys.
Well, that family extends to that whole farm.
Yeah. Did you know Mr. Hancock Bull?
No, I did not.
Yeah, I knew him. I've met him a couple of times. First time I met him, they were unloading a horse that they had imported from France over here, Le Fabuleux.
Uh-huh.
Hey, I even pronounced it right. And I met him over at the airport, you know, that time. Yeah, this had to be back in the 70s, I guess, that they brought that horse over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That horse had an acute death in the paddock, and Walter Kaufman, Dr. Kaufman.
Yeah.
Was concerned that somebody might have given him something. So that's why that big fence went up all around that road area.
Yeah.
So,
is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
A solid fence. Solid fence.
Now, would that have been back in the 70s or?
I'd say
had to be.
No, probably 80s.
Early 80s.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, hear all those sirens are coming to get Michael.
Well, they didn't have him. What are we going to talk about today, Doc?
Well, I thought as a general topic, we'd talk about short yearlings. You know, so you get these weanlings in there this time of year. So we're talking about the problems that can occur in this age group where they've been weanlings and they're coming toward the end of the year. We call those things short yearlings, at least the veterinary group does, as opposed to our yearlings going to the sales, which are long yearlings and the ones that show up there. And they have a set of problems that can occur and things that you kind of watch out for. So this disease we've talked a lot about on this show called Lawsonia, where they lose blood proteins and become very edematous in their head and under their belly and things like this, and they get pretty sick and some can die. It's a difficult disease to treat, but it only shows up in that age group.
Mm-hmm.
So what that would say is that they've picked it up somewhere. We don't know where they get it. We think wildlife are contributors. We know that mares may have exposure, and you always think about, you know, do they get in the pasture? Is there manure contamination? Anyway, these foals will become edematous and become very weak, lose weight very, very rapidly. It's called Lawsonia intracellularis because the bug goes inside the cell and lives there. But the animal has to be old enough to have some reaction. In other words, his immune system is maturing. And he's got this bug in him, and something happens where the immune system goes to get rid of that bug, and it destroys its own tissue as in the GI tract. And it's in the cells of the GI tract, so it's isolated to that one area. So the flag that goes up and we don't see it in older horses. We know that they have antibody titers. They've been exposed. But the disease only presents itself very uniquely in weanlings on up to short yearlings. And I don't believe I've seen a long yearling with it, but, you know, it's right in there. So what you look for there is you look for a weanling that doesn't go to the feed tub, starting to look a little sorry for himself. And so you go up to his muzzle or under his belly, and you take your finger and you push on them. And if they leave a dent, in other words, we call that pitting edema, then you call your veterinarian. Don't fool around with that one. And it's treatable, but like I say, if it gets to be advanced, it can be life-threatening. But again, that's an easy thing to kind of, well, not that easy to spot, but once it really presents itself, it's unique. We don't have anything else that presents so uniquely to a certain age group as Lawsonia. So you pay attention to that one. Another one, wobblers. We know you can occasionally get a wobbler as a suckling, but usually post-weaning is when you start to spot your wobblers. And so if you do spot a wobbler, now is the time of year that you can treat that. And we would treat it with what we call a paced diet. You would confine them for about 30 days. You'd put them on a paced diet, which is a low-energy diet. We know wobblers are associated with growth or the potential for a rapid growth spurt, and it shows up more readily. And associated with that is one of the lesions of wobblers are OCDs, same things you get in their long bones or in the stifles and things like that. So now you've got one you think is a wobbler, and the veterinarian comes out and examines and says, no, I don't see any neurological deficit in this animal at all. But you go palpate the stifle joints, and you feel extra fluid in maybe one of them. So that's really, again, we see our OCDs and our wobblers begin to show up typically in this particular age group, which we just classify as short yearlings. So that's another one we have to pay attention to. Another thing you don't want is you got a weanling and you think he's got Lawsonia, you're worried about him, but his blood proteins are normal, everything is great, but he's just starting to grind his teeth. And that one is what we call esophageal reflux, just like we get acid reflux. Mm-hmm. He's getting ulceration for associated disease, and they don't empty their stomach normally. So they get like a pyloric stricture or a duodenitis where they don't empty. So then we know horses don't vomit, but it'll secrete up the esophagus enough that then once in a while you hear them grind their teeth. And I'd say that's another one, big red flag. You better get them looked at and checked out because you can treat that one too, but you want to treat it early. Lawsonia, ulceration or reflux ulceration, you pick it up, get them taken care of, the prognosis is pretty good if you can get them turned a corner. The other one that we've talked about a lot on this show that you pay attention to is you got this weanling that just looks terrible, just not thriving and so we know that as they get older, rotococcus infections in the lungs becomes eliminated because their immune system matures. And so they can handle that, so we don't see rotococcus in yearlings, adults, whatever. There's something wrong with their immune system, and that's very, very, very rare. But a rhodococcus abdominal abscess will show up around weanling time, and they've got a big basketball in their belly. And they are very, very difficult to treat. We know that rhodococcus as an organism has multiple strains. And a lot of times these will fool you because you come out and look at them and you'll think it might be rhodococcus because he just doesn't look good. He might look like a rhodococcus foal that's on still on the mare, but this one's not. So you ultrasound the lungs and you don't really see a whole lot of lesions. It's like the strain of the organism goes to its point, and this happens to be in the abdomen, and they develop these, and the prognosis for those foals is very poor. They can be treated, but they have to be treated aggressively and early with antibiotics. When you see a basketball size mass in that abdomen, you're in trouble, big trouble. Yep.
Is this a bacteria?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And it's a bacteria we've talked about before that's a sneaky son of a gun, because it's like anybody in this room could have TB and we don't know it because the bacteria doesn't let you know it. Excuse me, until they get
TB.
Yeah, until it begins to show up in a cough. But it goes inside cells, so the body, it's not in the circulation, so the body doesn't know it's there until it almost acts like having cancer, where you've got these masses to deal with. And so, but once they mature and get their cellular immunity, which is about 6 months of age, mm-hmm. and then if they get exposed to the bug, it doesn't affect them. They don't get infected. So, anyway, that's just a classification that I thought, you know, and there, I always say, well, if something I see in the week before we have these shows will usually give me some topic. And I've seen wobbler and an abdominal abscess, in fact, two wobbler.
Wow.
And an abdominal abscess that has...
just here recently?
Yep.
Huh.
So,
those horses ground his teeth at one time, didn't we, Jack?
Yeah.
But he was a weaver and everything else. He weaved and,
he was just a very nervous kind of horse.
Teeth grinding, that we can't say anything in English, you know, it's called bruxism. And if you've got it in an adult racehorse, he's got gastric ulcers.
Is that right?
Yeah, he's got gastric ulcers. Huh. So usually we don't see that in any other category. So.
Yeah. All right, Doc.
Okay.
We do appreciate it.
Thank you much. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas
to
you.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
I just have one more thing.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. But I also want to thank Keeneland. We had our old friend's Christmas party, and they opened up the sports bar last Sunday, and we had a ball.
That's
good.
Great.
We had Kate was our bartender, and... everybody had a ball. Some people made a little bit of money, but anyway, we had a great, great time. And you know, some of the people that work with us don't spend much time at the racetrack, and they all had a ball going to the simulcast. And
good.
I wanted to thank Nick and Betsy Baxter and Turf Catering and everybody that helped us out with that.
That's wonderful.
That's great.
I got one more thing as well. As I went over to get Ursula and Jackie tickets to the Horse Park Museum for that Museum of the Horse exhibit. They didn't have any there. I'll have to get them some other time, but that'll be your Christmas delight, because when you go through that exhibit from it's the New York Museum of Natural History exhibit, everybody who even has an idea what a horse is ought to go see that. And if they go to that War Horse movie, they need to tie it all together.
Oh, good.
Great thing.
All right, well.
Thank you, guys.
I got something to say. I want to thank you two guys for coming on the show every week. We really appreciate it, both of you. You too, Michael.
We're so informed.
Always learn something.
And thanks for coming, Michael.
I always learn something from Doc, but don't worry. I take the edge on it.
Well, I like to teach you a little bit about pedigrees.
That's right. I like to hit the Wayback Machine, find out what's happening in 1950.
Anybody that doesn't know Nadge Willer from Prince Quillo needs a little tutoring. All right.
Well, Merry Christmas to both of you and Rusty.
All righty. Thank you, guys.
We'll see you next week.
We'll see you a little bit later.
Oh, next week, by the way, it's 8 to 10 because of a ball game.
Yeah. Did you all hear that?
At the training center.
Yes. Yeah, they play Louisville next week.
Yeah, I know. 10. We get bumped. So, it's that ball game stuff.
All right, well, Unbridled Song has sired 93 stakes winners, but only one has won grade one stakes on dirt at a distance under a mile. And that was First Defense, a brilliant sprinter with a great sire pedigree. First Defense sprinted 7 furlongs to win the grade one four-go at Saratoga, getting the distance in 1:21.2. Sprinted 7 furlongs in 1:20.4 at Belmont Park. 1:22.1 at Churchill. Ran 6 furlongs in 1:09.2 to win the grade three Jackford Stakes at Belmont. Carried his speed around 2 turns to win the Long Branch Breeders' Cup Stakes at Monmouth. What a sire pedigree. He's one of 13 grade one stakes winners by Unbridled Song. His dam, a grade one stakes winner herself, churned over 894,000, is by the great sire Seattle Slough. What's more, she's a half-sister to 2 proven sires of grade one stakes winners and power maker, Chester House. First crop yearlings by First Defense sold for up to 165,000 this year. He stands for 7,500 live foal at Judmont Farm, home also of the proven grade one sire Mizzen Mass. Inquiries to Garrett O'Rourke or Aaron Fry, and see the website at judmont.com. All right, Jackie.
Biederman Real Estate and Auctioneers has some wonderful
buys. Start over again.
Biederman Real Estate and Auctioneers.
There you go.
Has some wonderful listings. You know, I told you that one out in Nicholasville Road that was 25 acres with a stunning house. It was just $895. We thought was
that. Well, don't talk about something he's already sold, honey.
Well, it's pending. But what I was to say is there's one real similar to that in Mercer County. Now, that's just Harrodsburg. That's not that far. It's a 122.79-acre turnkey thoroughbred sport horse operation. A 12-stall barn, wash rack, tack room, 11-bent barn for stalls, etc. It's got a main residence and a 3 2-bath tenant homes. And listen to the price on this now, and this is easy commute to Lexington, $695,000. See, once again, that's really an amazing price for that much property.
Yeah.
And with interest rates the way they are now, this is a buy. I mean, most things are $5,000, or I mean million. You know, it's just, I just think that pointing out that kind of stuff is just tremendous. Okay, 41 acres on Kearney Road, minutes to the horse park, 20 stalls, 3 barns, additional 2 stalls, 2,500 plus square foot residence on a wonderful place in Fayette County, $745,000. Again, way under a million. So you need to give Tommy Biederman a call at 277-2030. Or go to BiedermanBrokerage.com. That's BIEDERMAN, Brokerage.com.
Well, no biz like Showbiz won graded stakes at 2 and 3, earned over $1,544,000. Won his first start at Belmont by nearly 11 lengths, won the grade 2 Remsen, and ran second to Scat Daddy in the grade 1 Champagne in 3 starts as a 2-year-old. At 3 and 10 starts, he won the grade 1 Wood Memorial, the grade 2 Jamaica Handicap, the Grade 2 National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame Stakes, the Grade 3 Kent Breeders' Cup Stakes, the Grade 3 Holy Bull, and he placed in the Grade 2 Dwyer and the Grade 2 Fountain of Youth. No biz like Showbiz won 3 graded stakes on dirt. He won 3 graded stakes on turf. He was assigned 122 pounds on the experimental free handicap, the third high weight, and excluding his first start in a maiden special as a 2-year-old, every start came in a graded stakes. Now, this was some kind of racehorse. Bred to 170 mares in his first 2 seasons at stud. No biz like Showbiz stands for $5,000 doing a full stance of nurses at Crestwood Farm. Inquiries to Pope McLean. See the website at crestwoodfarm.com.
Run up by them one more time. Tell me how you'd never cheat on me. Tell me that you always will be true, dear. Run that by me one more time. Now I can read it right.
Want to know what that is? I wasn't supposed to step on. It's a dead rat.
There's a new wind blowing in.
Let me take care of my good friend. Take care of my good friend David's Schweitzer over here, over at Kentucky Thoroughbred Association.
Here.
And we're going to announce the breeders of Kentucky Bred Stakes winners over this past weekend. And light racing week, if I can say it, The Gravesend Handicap, of course, in New York, went to Frazzle, bred by Silver Thread Farm. The Dania Beach Stakes at Gulfstream Park. Summerfront won that. That's another Warfront. It's a two-year-old, incidentally, bred by Gracefield Breeding. The Latalia Memorial at the Fairgrounds, Good Deed won that. Broken Vow, and, of course, Broken Vow over at Pin Oak. This one bred by Bert, Elaine, and Richard Klein. The Tenacious Stakes at the Fairgrounds. Fast Alex won that, bred by James Taffel. Tenacious, incidentally, was a grand old racehorse for Mrs. Joe W. Brown, son of Chaladon, and he used to tear him up down at the fairgrounds. Good racehorse. Tough. The Bonnepaw Stakes over at the fairgrounds went to Chamberlain Bridge, bred by Eugene Melling. The Blushing KD Handicap at the fairgrounds, Cherokee Queen, bred by J. Mack Robinson. The Harlan's Holiday Stakes at Gulfstream Park went to Trickmeister. That's a proud citizen, of course, proud citizen at Airdrie Stud. This one bred by Burton C. Jones, who owns Airdrie Stud, of course, and Tim Thornton, the general manager of Airdrie Stud. The Prairie Bayou Stakes at Turfway Proceed B was bred by Hunter Valley Farm, H&W Thoroughbreds, and Mary Wade. All right, Jackie.
Okay.
We want to do some announcements. A few. Let's see what time have we got here.
Yeah, this is under the NTRA Safety and Integrity Alliance, the Thoroughbred Horse Show Association. Now, this is the one that was put together to give racehorses another chance, new life after racing. It's open to thoroughbreds. So they already announced two thoroughbred-only horse shows so far in 2012, April 14th and 15th, and October 5th to the 7th, introductory-level multi-discipline, show jumping, dressage, and competitive trail riding. Oh, I wonder what competitive trail riding is. Don't fall off? How far you go? I don't understand what that is. It's usually pretty laid back. Also, you can participate as a sponsor, and, of course, as a competitor, contact Jan Roll, 421-8710. I think that's just about the best. That's very good. Oh, here's an announcement. McCauley Brothers is going to be closed Monday, December 26th, and Monday, January 2nd. Also, I've mentioned this before, but it could take another mentioning. Instant Racing handle, about $2 million a week in November, up 24%. And let me see. I've forgotten the guy's name, but they've introduced a bill for casino gambling at the racetracks. That thing is in the House, the Kentucky House in the Congress. So, and Governor Beshear has said he is going to, if that doesn't fly, he's going to present a constitutional amendment to allow additional. It's not like there's not gambling now, you know. It's just expanded gambling at the racetracks. Oh, let's see. The horse park. Horse park's slowing down, of course, because getting close to Christmas. Southern Lights is open. Let me see. It's Christmas Eve. I think it's open next week, but I would think you'd want to call. If you want to check on Southern Lights, it's 255-5727. And, or go to the Horse Park, main number, 259-4200, or kyhorsepark.com. That museum, the exhibit called The Horse is running through April 6th, but now that thing is only open from Wednesday through Sunday. I know somebody tried to go on a Monday, and it was just not there. Central Kentucky Riding for Hope Therapeutic Riding Center at the Horse Park needs good, useful driving cart. Well, you know, the Horse Park is only open Wednesday through Sundays through March 14th. That just started. That's why Monday and Tuesday you can't do anything. What else is going on? Maker's Mark Secretariat Center, also located at the Horse Park, needs a working condition horse trailer and or pickup truck. That's pricey. I don't know where they get, maybe they'd take donations and go at it that way. So, I don't know. That's a lot of bucks. Thoroughbred Charities of America's time for its 22nd annual Select Stallion Season Auction. That will be Saturday, January 7th, 6:30 at the Keeneland Entertainment Center. They're going to honor old friends, our friends at Old Friends, with the Industry Service Award. And Fasig Tipton gets the Leadership Award. There's limited reserve seating, and the attire is cocktail. And they have a live auctions of select stallion season. They got nice stuff. They're going to have vacations for auctioning and all sorts of things. So you can also bid on the stallion seasons. That's a telephone auction, and then it finishes up with when it'll go live, so you can keep up with the whole thing. The auction hotline is 276-48-4989. Now, if you want a list of seasons, go to tca.org. That's the best way to remember it. Thoroughbred Charities of America, tca.org. War Horse is, of course, the new movie out about the horse that was sold to the, well, I guess, cavalry in the First World War. Anyway, it's supposed to be a fabulous movie, and it's based on a book. The book will be used in the Kentucky Horse Park Expanded Literacy Program. They did this with the Black Stallion. They gave away 15,000 books to 10,000 kids, first and fourth grade kids. Got out of school, went out to the horse park, and they did all that to encourage reading. It's a great idea. And now it's going to be used with the new movie, War Horse.
Well, Fahan, a two-time winner in Great Britain, is being pointed toward the major three-year-old stakes there. He's from the first crop by Jazzle. So is multiple winner Compressor and Churchill Downs winner Perdido. And most recently, Just Sizzle. A front-running maiden special winner at Turfway. That was on December 16th. To date, Jazzle has 9 first-crop two-year-olds to win a place, and, like their sire, they're going to improve with a distance of ground. Jazzle did break his maiden at 2, but then he went on to win Grade 1 stakes at 3. He won the classic Grade 1 Belmont Stakes, ran a fast-closing second in the Grade 1 Wood Memorial and a fast-closing the 4th in the Grade 1 Kentucky Derby for earnings of over $890,000. His half-sister, champion Rags to Riches, also won the Belmont Stakes. His dam was a graded stakes winner, a broodmare of the year. Second dam won the classic Kentucky Oaks, was a multiple graded producer, and grand dam of a champion. His third dam was yet another broodmare of the year. Jazzle is a classic performer with a classic pedigree, siring two-year-olds that can run. Watch Farm in 2012. He stands at Shadwell Farm for 7,500 live foal. Inquiries to Stallion Manager Kent Barnes and see the website at ShadwellFarm.com.
Quill and Leather and Tack, the world's, now you hear, listen to this, the biggest little custom halter shop east of Mississippi. Doesn't that sound like something Ralph Quillen came up with? Huh. But they've got great stuff for Christmas, great gift shop. You get over there real quick, I'm not sure how long they're open today, but they've got tons of stuff. And a lot of the stuff is pre-made, so you can pick it up. And, of course, it's a fun place to be. I was there the other day. The place is really mobbed.
Yeah, I went in yesterday and bought gifts for a couple of kids.
Kids, yeah. What did I get the other day? I went over there for something.
I forget it was for somebody. I don't know.
I don't know. I forget. But they always got
probably
a great selection.
Probably bought me a toothpick for Christmas or something.
Well,
I'm gonna give you a
Twitch. Found out. I'm sorry. Anyway, it's the best quality leather shop anywhere. They do a great job. Their number in Paris is 987-0215. Or you can go to Quillin.com, Quillin.com.
Well, Summer Bird won the classic $1 million Grade 1 Belmont Stakes. He won the Grade 1 $1 million Travers Stakes. And he won the Grade 1 $750,000 Jockey Club Gold Cup. He was the first three-year-old to sweep those three coveted stakes since Easy Gore in 1989. And he was, and rightly so, voted champion three-year-old. During his career, he met and defeated the likes of Quality Road, Dunkirk, Mind That Bird, Hold Me Back, Warriors Reward, Tisway, Munnings. He earned his Eclipse Award by meeting and defeating the best of his day. Some of Bird's sire, Grindstone, won the Grade 1 Belmont, the Grade 1 Travers, and the Grade 1 Champagne. And he has sired the winners of the Kentucky Derby and also the Belmont. A descendant of the female family, which has already given us such sires as Tappet and Relaunch, some of Bird's first foals are due in 2012, and he stands for $15,000 doing a foal stands and nurses. There's a 5% discount if you pay that fee by November 1. Inquiries to Jerry Duffy or Jenny Barnett at Windstar Farm. See the website, windstarfarm.com.
Masterson Station Park is just a gem here in the Bluegrass. We're lucky we've got it. It's open to people who want to ride all year round. Their indoor ring, because of the bad weather and winter and all that stuff, is now open Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays, and they're open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Now, you need to call Georgia for reservations, 253-0328. You got to let them know 24 hours in advance because they have to have somebody there. It's $15 an hour, $25 for two or more riders. You make payment at the door. It's a wonderful thing. That's going to take us through spring. So as the weather gets worse and the ground gets harder, we've got a place to ride. UK Equine Initiative is going to host an equine showcase and a breeder's short course. This is coming up January 20, and the short course is the 21st. So just stay tuned. I'll have more on it. It's $45 or both for $75 if you hurry up and make your reservations. They're going to do it out at the UK Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory, and that's... Go to the Kentucky Horse Council and pull that up on Google, Kentucky Horse Council, and you'll get all the rest of the information you need for that. I've had several friends let me know that they had their trailer repaired at Sally Vann's, and who knew that they did that? One friend had her fenders repaired, her rubber mat repaired, brakes checked, bearings packed, and she recommends it like you wouldn't believe. So, call Ben Eversole at Sally Vann's. It's a 513-675-8874. Just plain old call Sally Vann's and get a hold of them. And, you know, they do so much. Mary Lee Butte had the backstretch people, Christmas for kids and all that kind of stuff. They had all sorts of presents and things. And Sally Vann just loaded them up in a couple of vans and took them over to Keeneland, where they had a very successful Christmas party. Said best one ever. So the kids were just thrilled. Shaker Village, if you ride down there, it's $10 a ride, but you know, you go down there enough, you're going to spend some money. You can get a $10 a month season pass. Right now, of course, it's $120 every month. It goes down 10. So, if you want to do that, you need to get a hold of Shaker Village. Just call them or get on Google them again, too. Let's see. That's old. It's 5 o'clock somewhere. They're calling the Mid-South Eventing and Dressage Association Gala Celebration. January 14th at Spindle Top, cocktails, dinner, dancing, festive attire. You know, you have to be careful who you say that to. You never know what some people show up called festive attire. I mean, I don't know if I'd say that to me or not. I want to once again recommend my friend Lee Clark, Clark Paint Contracting. Did a fantastic job on our barns and fences. Reasonable rates. He's at 333-1102. And like Doc said, that horse exhibit from the Metropolitan or some, no, Museum of Natural History, I guess, in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah. said it's fabulous. We got to get out there. Yeah, we will. We got to do that. Old Friends calendars are for sale. Get a hold of Sylvia at oldfriendsequine.org or give them a call, 502-863-1775.
Well, Leah Son, winner last Saturday of the Grade 1 $750,000 cash call for Tootie, is just the most recent in a long list of superior runners sired by the late Indian Charlie. Indian Charlie was one of 63 stakes winners by In Excess. Winner of the Grade 1 Whitney, the Grade 1 Suburban, the Grade 1 Woodward, and Grade 1 Metropolitan. In Excess, too, is gone. But the sire line lives. Another of In Excess's 63 stakes winners is a multiple graded stakes winner, Notional. Standing at Spendthrift Farm for $7,500. Due when the foal stands and nurses. Notional won the Grade 2 San Rafael Stakes at Santa Anita. He won the Grade 3 Risen Star Stakes at Fairgrounds. Ran second to Scat Daddy in the Grade 1 Florida Derby as a three-year-old. The next year, he won the Grade 3 Salvatore Mile at Monmouth, and he was rep precocious at two, breaking his maiden at Santa Anita in 109 flat and placing in the Grade 3 Hollywood Preview Stakes. He earned $733,240. Now, Notional covered 110 mares in 2010, 101 in 2011, and his first crop yearling sold for up to $90,000 this year. Your inspection is invited to Spendthrift Farm. Inquiries to Ken Wilkins, Des Dempsey, Sean Feld, or Ned Toffee, and see the website at SpendthriftFarm.com. I want to talk about my good friend Ron Wallace. I was talking to Ron the other day. Ron's a heck of a guy. He sent me a check, double the money on
bless him.
On what he owed me. Bless I called him up and I said, Don, you spent me too much money. And he said, well, I just quit my account. So
I love him myself.
How about that? Already spent it, Don. How about that? But Don has Equine Farm Management, Inc. It's a firm that he founded back in 1995. And he has managed, what he does, he will manage several farms, smaller farms, at one time. And that way, a small farm owner can
afford
it, instead of paying a big figure for one manager, you get a fourth of his time, for instance, if he had four farms.
It's a great idea.
It's a great idea. And he has run some great farms, of course. And now he just got through with Chanticleer and handling that dispersal. He managed that for a long time. He can stay on and manage long
time. Yeah, what did he get for that mayor?
$8,500,000.
That's a recommendation.
Everything's sold in that, well, in that sale, because he had them looking great.
Yeah.
And
I'm sure he was in charge of picking them out and doing the breeding, too.
Well, he did. He did a whole lot of it, I'll tell you that. But anyway, they had that dispersal. What he can do also, if you've just bought some property, or you have some property and you're not exactly, things aren't running smoothly, he can come in and straighten things out for you. Or he can just start right from scratch and build you the farm and put it up where a horse owner can enjoy their horse farms. And that's basically what he does. And he's, like I say, he's been around, been doing this for a number of years, and he's a great guy to deal with. Dr. Doug Byers, told me about him, and we got together, and he's been with us ever since. Here's his cell number. It's an 859 number. It's 621-1655. His website is equinefarmmanagement.com, and he can sure help you. So give him a call at 621-1655. Well, Artie Schiller, with 9 stakes horses, 5 stakes winners in his first crops, off to a solid start at stud. His 5 2011 stakes winners, including Grade 3 stakes winner Ann's Beauty, Del Mar stakes winner in Grade 1 place Mr. Commons, who sprinted a mile in 1:34.4 the day he won the Oceanside Stakes, Santa Anita stakes winner Irish Art, and Woodbine stakes winner Bear's Chart. Ann's Beauty, winner of the Grade 3 Ontario Lassie Stakes, ran a mile in 1:33.3. That's one of the fastest miles ever turned in by Philly. Artie Schiller is passing on the class that carried him to victory in 7 stakes, 6 of them great, including the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Mile. And he earned over $1,533,000. He's a typical son of El Prado, the sire of the nation's leading juvenile sire, Kitten's Joy, and, of course, of the very popular Medaglia Duro. who ranked 7th on the sire list this year. And Artichilla's Dam, Hidden Light, was a multiple grade 1 stakes winner. Artichilla stands for $10,000, doing the full stands and nurses with a 5% discount if you pay the fee by November 1. Inquiries to Jerry Duffy, Jenny Barnett. The number right at Windstar, 873-1717. See the website at windstarfarm.com.
I got the horse right here, the name is Paul Revere, and here's a guy that says if the weather's clear, can do, can do.
All righty. Well, I've got an announcement or two here. Our little buddy Adam Bowman.
Oh, yeah.
Won 2 races yesterday.
Last couple days ago.
At Philadelphia. Yeah, it was a couple of days ago. And anyway, he won them back to back up at Philly. Somebody, they finally put him on some live horses.
You know? I know.
Michael Bowen was saying, I always bet on him to show because he's on an 80-1 shot that comes in, pays $25 to show. Or something like that.
Yeah.
He moves his horses up, is what he does.
Oh, he tries hard.
He tries hard. He's fearless, and he knows the shortest way home's that rail.
Also, those kids come out of that jockey school really, really, really get them out of the gate. They learn to get them out of the gate, and out they come. They're good at that.
Yes,
they always break well, so.
And of course, Adam weighs 92 pounds soaking wet, so he gets in real light. He won with, these two, the fourth, and the fifth race up at Parks. This is where he's stabled up there. I mean, he's got his book up there. And the first one was at 5.5 furlongs, and he had an outside post position, and he stalked early pace with that and got caught a little wide. I know he hated that, knowing Adam, but he got up and won and beat, he was on the third choice there. Favorite winner out of the money. And he won, got up and won by 3/4 of a length. And then the very next race, he was on a horse that, had the rail going a mile, a 3-year-old filly. And, he broke her in front and wired the field with her.
See?
And she hung on and, beat the favorite by, a length and a half. He had a 5-length lead at the 8th pole. One by a length and a half, but he rated along in front and did a real good job. This is a good kid. I really hope he makes it.
Yeah, he's really, really, really a hard worker. Chris McCarron talked about he was always in the gym getting stronger and stronger and stronger.
Yeah.
Because he's a little bitty 90-pound guy on a 1,200-pound big animal.
I tell you what, it's 90 pounds of muscle.
Exactly.
And he's
right.
Smart.
Yeah.
Also,
brag time.
Brag time. Now, this is just through this past Monday, and we'll catch up the winners from the Thoroughbred Center, but we'll catch up with you on next week's show and give you all. But the list keeps growing and growing and growing this month.
I know.
We're up in through this past Monday. That would be the 19th. We've had 49 winners out of the Thoroughbred Center. 49. That's better than 2 a day.
Ah, it's amazing. It's
now, the record, I think, was one day last summer. It was either, I think it was 59. I don't think we hit 60. But I hope we can. All we need is 11 more winners to get 60.
Yeah, and a lot of racing under the holidays.
Yeah. Well, there's not much during the middle of the week, but,
weekends.
And, of course, for Turfway is just 4 days.
Yeah.
But Anyway,
they're knocking them dead, and this is the best racetrack around, period. It's dirt, and it's got Harold, that rat who never lets the track get bad, so Ursel's always at his post. You know, we wake up, and it's real cold, and it's been raining, and now it's freezing, and we wonder if they lost the track.
I wonder if I have to go in today.
And sure enough, Ursel gets in there and says,
that damn Harold.
Right. He's the best. He sure is.
Okay, well, if you'd like to participate in the lucrative program for New York Breds, consider this. The leading sire in New York for the last 3 years has been Posse of Vinery, New York. The sire of 2011 Eclipse Award candidate Caleb's Posse, the only 3-year-old of 2011 with 2 Grade 1 stakes wins, Posse stands for $10,000 live foal. There is also an outstanding roster of stallions standing at Vinery, Kentucky, including More Than Ready, currently ranked fifth on the general sire list, and he was last year's number one sire on the juvenile sire list, and last year's number one ranked freshman sire. Congrats. He's also a leading second crop sire this year. Now, whatever your goals in the thoroughbred industry, the expert staffs at Vinery, Kentucky, Vinery, New York, and Vinery, Florida stand ready to assist you, and here's their pledge. They will do their utmost to make your venture in horse racing both pleasurable and profitable. The number at Vinery, Kentucky is 455-9388. Just ask for John Gasper or Steve Castanola, Grant Williams or Francis Relihan, and see the website at vinery.com. When Jackie and I moved to Bourbon County, as about 25 years ago, we checked around to see where we should go for our insurance needs. The name that kept coming up was the Hopewell Company. So we had a talk with Ted McLean at the Hopewell Company. We've been doing business with him ever since. And believe me, we've been more than satisfied. The Hopewell Company is an independent insurance agency. They don't work for an insurance company. They work for you. And they represent a carefully selected group of financially sound, reputable companies, so they are able to offer the best coverage at the most competitive price. The folks at Hopewell are prepared to provide you with a no-cost, no-obligation review and comparison of your insurance. The Hopewell Company in Paris, established in 1955 by Joe McLean, is a full-service insurance agency. Give them a call, 987-2347. Or better yet, stop by the office at 820 Main Street in Paris. They're nice people, and they do a great job for you.
ESPN Sports Radio 1300, broadcasting live from the Mingy Beef Jerky Studios.
Mingy Beef Jerky, you'll love it as much as we do.
This is WLXG AM Lexington.
Well, champion Stevie won the boys a side of 12 2-year-old winners, two stakes winners, and a third to place in graded stakes in his first crop to race this year. Made to Love You broke her maiden at Santa Anita, then won, was a four-length winner of the $100,000 Moccasin Stakes. That's also at Santa Anita. Also competing in California, Run Stevie Run has won the Athlebon Stakes, and Starship Flair, after posting back-to-back wins at Calder, went west and finished second, just got beat a nose in the Grade 3 Mies Stakes at Hollywood Park. And, in addition to those 12 winners, nine others have placed. It's no question about it. Stevie won the boys, siring runners. The champion two-year-old of his year, Stevie won the boys to stand the 2012 season for $5,000 live foal. In stakes last weekend, undefeated Trickmeister, a four-year-old Copa Proud Citizen, won the Harlan's Holiday Stakes at Gulfstream Park. He's won three stakes in a row now. The other two were at Saratoga and at Delaware. Sire of a winner of an Eclipse Award and a son of Gone West, Proud Citizen stands for $7,500 live foal at Mr. and Mrs. Brereton C. Jones Airdrie Stud. Breeding incentives are available. Check the website at airdriestud.com. And remember, the Airdrie Stallions are your key to racing profit.
I'm heading down this highway, having tears running both eyes. Thinking of my folks and friends, sunny southern skies.
All righty. Well, we are starting the second hour. Horse Tales, and I want to remind you that in the second hour, we're going to have a reading, starting in about 20 minutes now, or 15 minutes of, John Tanner Foote's, short story, entitled Old Pastures. And it's beautifully written. It was written back in about 1918. And, if you can put up with my reading it, well, stay tuned. I think you'll enjoy it. I enjoyed doing it. Also, next week is another basketball game. I think they play Louisville at noon, and there is a one-hour. There is a one-hour pregame show. And I told Michael and Doc it was a two-hour pregame show. It's not just a one-hour show. So we will be on from 9 till 11. Huh, okay. Got that straight finally. I'll have to call them up and straighten them out. Seems I'm the one that screwed them up. I want to talk a little bit about one of the better two-year-olds of 1958 now, and his name was Intentionally, foal, of course, of 1956, by intent, out of a mare named My Recipe, by Discovery, bred by Harry Isaacs, who had Brookfield Farm, and trained by Eddie Kelly. He was foaled It's Mrs. Robert Bardwell's, well, Jenny Bardwell, everybody knew as Jenny, Wolf Run Farm, which was out on the old Frankfort Pike, right on the left, as you're going out, I'm trying to remember that the first, actually, I think it's the first four-way stop to you come to, and it was right on that, on the left there at that four-way stop. What's the name? Valley Road. Corner of Valley Road and Old Frankfort. All right, get that around. Anyway, that's where Wolf Run Farm was. Intent was the best horse that Isaac had ever owned up until that time. And Intentionally and Demobilize, another top two-year-old in 1958, were both from the second crop by Intent. Intentionally won his debut on May the 29th at Garden State by four lengths, and his second start on June the 14th at Monmouth Park by six. So he was off to an excellent start. And I think our computer's gone blank. Oh, there we go. let's see, where was I there? Then his first stakes race came on the 25th of June in the Tyro Stakes at Monmouth Park. Led all the way and won by a length and a half that day. Beat a horse named Royal Anthem. Remember him real well. He was by Spy Song. Easy Spur. The son of Crowfoot ran third. And his next time out came in the Sapling Stakes, also at Monmouth, and he broke poorly that day and finished second. A horse named Watch Your Step beat him. He was the son of Citation. Running third was A Restless Wind by Windy City the second. And he ran second to First Minister in the Grand Union Hotel Stakes on August the 13th at Saratoga. First Minister was the son of Primate. Trying to remember where Primate, I think maybe Primate stood at Claiborne. But I'm not sure about that. Then in his next start, he was fourth, A Restless Wind, Winsome Winner, and Demobilize, the other son of Intentionally, in the Washington Park for Tootie up in Chicago. And he dropped a head decision to Demobilize in the World's Playground Stakes at Atlantic City. And Sword Dancer was in the beaten field that day. 10 days later, on September the 20th, he beat First Landing, who was by turn two, in the Futurity Stakes at Belmont Park. Of course, that was down the straightaway there. And Dunce ran third, son of Tom Fool, which is owned by Claiborne Farm. First Landing, as I said, was by turn two and raced for Christmas Teach Cherney. First Landing got revenge in the next race, which was the Champagne Stakes at a mile on October the 16th. Intentionally finished third. He got beat three lengths by the winner, but he was moved up to second. Tommy Lee had finished second, but had carried Intentionally wide going into the first turn and was disqualified and placed third. Running next was the Mile and a 16th Garden State Stakes, and it was the only race of the campaign that he failed to get a piece of the purse. It was a sloppy track. And he was fifth behind First Landing, Tommy Lee, Sword Dancer, of course, by Sun Glow, and Rico Tezia, who was by Royal Charger. And his final start as a two-year-old, he won the Mile and a 16th Pimlico Futurity, tracked the early pace of Pilot by Jet Pilot, ended up over Spencer if it stood, then held Rico Tezio and Black Hills to win that one. Now, let's see how we're doing here, 108. Okay. Well, December 18th at Gulfstream, the $100,000 Dania Beach Stakes was won by Summerfront, a two-year-old colt by Warfront, bred in Kentucky by Gracefield Breeding, and sold at Keeneland's April two-year-old in training sale for $475,000. Summerfront is undefeated in three starts. Won his first start at Belmont, then he won the King Cougat Stakes at Aqueduct. And Warfront is also the sire of the highly promising two-year-old State of Play, a Grade 2 Stakes winner at Saratoga, and of the Grade 1 place two-year-old Philly Emerald Gold. In his first crop, now three-year-olds, Warfront has sired 10 stakes horses, 8 stakes winners, 4 graded stakes winners, including Grade 1 stakes winner Summer Soiree, winner of 3 graded stakes this year, including the Grade 1 Del Mar Oaks, and The Factor, also winner of 3 2011 graded stakes, including the Grade 1 Pat O'Brien, The factor also set a new track record, Santa Anita, 6 furlongs in 106-4. Warfront, a son of Danzig, stands at Claiborne Farm for $60,000, doing a full stanza of nurses. Inquiries to Bernie Sams and see the website at claibornefarm.com. Sally Van Service has been hauling some of the world's most valuable thoroughbreds for nearly 6 decades. Kentucky Derby winners, Preakness winners, Belmont Stakes winners, Breeders' Cup winners. The list of great horses transported by Sally Vans is nearly endless. And that's not counting the hundreds of thousands of breeding shed trips and sales trips down through the years. But here's a promise from Sally Van Service. The care given your shipper, whether it's a pony clubber headed to the horse park or a favorite for the Run for the Roses, will be second to none. You can rest assured that our vans are in superior condition and that the person behind the wheel is one of the best in the business. That's the way we do business at Sally Van Service. And that's why, for nearly 6 decades, Sally Van Service has been the safest way to the winner's circle. Well, Eclipse Award winner Uncle Mo, the most successful son of Indian Charlie, stands at Ashford Stud. Uncle Mo earned the Eclipse Award as the undefeated champion 2-year-old colt of his year. He sprinted 6 furlongs and 109-1 to break his maiden at Saratoga by 14.5 lengths, ran a mile in 134-2 to take the Grade 1 Champagne Stakes by nearly 5 lengths. He won the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile by 4.25 lengths, completely dominating his fields in every start. Plagued by health problems at 3, he still sprinted a mile in 133-4 to win the Grade 2 Kelso Handicap. And he also won the Timely Rider Stakes at Gulfstream. He was retired with earnings of over $1,600,000. The untimely loss of Indian Charlie was represented by his 5th Grade 1 Stakes winner just last Saturday, puts the spotlight on his greatest son, and Uncle Mo has the racing class, the pedigree, and the confirmation to become a great sire. He's to stand his first season for $35,000, doing a full stanza nurses at Coolmore's Ashford Stud, home also of the nation's number one ranked sire on the general sire list for the past 3 years, of course, Giant's Causeway. See the website at coolmore.com. Leading sires, potential leading sires, only at Coolmore.
Run that button one more time. Tell me how you'd never cheat on me. Tell me that you always will be true, dear. Run that button one more time.
All right. Well, that win, that defeat by First Landing kind of moved him down a little bit on experimental free handicap. He ended up with an assignment of 123 pounds, equal weight with Dunce, and who raced for Claiborne Farm. He was by Tom Fu. The top weight of the experimental that year, 1958, was First Landing by Turn 2, and one of my all-time favorites, Tommy Lee, was in with 126 pounds. I still haven't done anything on Dunch yet. We'll be getting to him. It was some nice horses in that crop. Sword Dancer was in there. He was assigned 122 pounds. As I said earlier, he was by Sunglow. Sunglow stood over at, where was he? Mirror Farm. All right. I'll get it right in a minute. Others in with 120 was a Toll, Crafty Skipper, and Restless Wind. A Toll was by a horse named Flushing the Second, an imported horse, and I can't remember for the life of me where he was at stud. Crafty Skipper was by Crafty Admiral, who stood out for Joe Metz. And I never can remember that road name, the road right across from Pisgah Pike. It's Pisgah on one side, and what's the name of the on the other side, Jackie, right there? By the castle, down to Versailles Road.
You turn left and you go down there to an orchard.
Yeah, and you get to the orchard, you get to Joe Metz's old farm.
Is it on the right?
It's on the left, and he stood a crafty admiral.
The name of that,
Crafty Admiral was the leading sire winners to it. I don't think your mic is on.
That's okay.
Is it on? Okay,
it's on.
Crafty Admiral, who led the sire list for winners a couple of times. He was an extremely good handicap horse himself. He also stood Royal Note, who was by Spy Song, and he stood, who else? Lincoln Road was there for a while before he died. Horse ran second to Tim Tam, 1958 Derby. A Royal Note was undefeated as a two-year-old. Only horse of Nash's age to give him weight and beat him. Did that in the Sapling Stakes. Well, moving right along. Intentionally, as I said, he was assigned 123 pounds on that free handicap. And his sire Intent was by War Relic. Intent was a foal in 1948. War Relic is, of course, the son of Man of War. War Relic stood over at a faraway farm with his sire, Man of War. As a matter of fact, if you walked in the stud barn over at on Man of Woods Mountain, Man of War Farm, if you walk in there, the first stall on the left was Man of War. The first stall on the right was War Admiral. And the second stall on the left, there was a hallway between it there, was War Relics. And when Riddle died, both War Admiral and War Relic were moved over to Preston Madden's Hamburg place, because Man of War was gone by that time. All righty. Let's see. Well, anyway, he also won the Intent, won the San Juan Capistrano twice. He won several other stakes, mostly of them out on the West Coast. He was not as good a sire as one of his sons in reality, or as far as that goes. Well, intentionally sired in reality. So intentionally was a better sire than his sire Intent. But he got a couple of good horses, like Is a Duchess and Intensive. Hush Up. I remember Hushabye. Hushabye raised for Miss Barry V. Fisher. And, of course, intentionally sired in reality, and that's... But more about that later on, because intentionally went on to be voted champion sprinter.
You know, it's interesting looking at this experimental. When you go down the list, it'll skip a little ways, and then you'll see horses that turned out to be better sires than horses were, you know...
I guess the best sire on there would have been intentionally, because
right?
He sired in reality, and that's sire line that keeps going on and on. But there's some nice horses there. Here's Royal Orbit down there. He'll run the Preakness the next year. Quill was a champion filly that year. She was in with 117 pounds.
What kind of broodmare was she? She was tremendous.
Oh, yeah, she was.
Yeah. See, so she's probably, although she's down a little on that, she's probably, as far as breeding goes.
Yeah. You see some horses. Finnegan, he went out to California. He wasn't much. Pilot was by Jet Pilot at War Admiral Ware. He went over to Spencer Farm, but he didn't do very much. Dark Vintage was a very nice filly by a horse named Wine List, who got some good two-year-olds. Old Foals in by Tudor Minstrel was a extremely fast horse racing out on the California. Here is a good horse, an excellent stud horse, Baghdad, was by Double J.
Yes.
Ended up, he was in with 114 pounds. And, of course, he went to stud down at Cleburne Farm. Here's Black Hills in here by Prince Quilla. If I'm not mistaken, Black Hills fell in the next year's Derby.
Really?
I'm pretty sure that I think that's the horse that went down. Well, he wasn't hurt, but he clipped heels and went down.
Oh.
At the head of the stretch.
Oh, that'll.
And of course, that was Tommy Lee's Derby. Sword Dancer was second, and Dunst finished third. Who else is in there that might jump out at me? Trollis, son of Priam the second, won the Florida Derby the next year. Let's see, here's Open View.
Son Troilus. Interesting. Go ahead.
Octopus by John's Joy. Oh, there's another horse that stood at Joe Metz's. Octopus, son of John's Joy.
Ah.
So, and Shirley Jones was a top race mare the next year. She was rated with 110 pounds. And here's Fiji in there, another top producer. That's interesting to look at these old experimental handicaps.
Yeah, for me, anyway. That I don't know as much about it, obviously, as you do, but I go down and something like Baghdad will jump out, you know.
Yeah. Okay, well, Unbridled Song has sired 93 stakes winners, but only one has won Grade 1 stakes on dirt at a distance under a mile, and that one was First Defense, a brilliant sprinter with a great sire pedigree. First Defense sprinted 7 furlongs to win the Grade 1 4-go handicap at Saratoga, getting the distance in 1:21.2. He sprinted 7 furlongs and 1:20.4 at Belmont, and 1:22.1 at Churchill Downs, ran 6 furlongs and 1:09.2 to win the Grade 3 Jiper Stakes at Belmont, and he carried his speed around 2 turns to win the Long Branch Breeders' Cup Stakes at Monmouth Park. And what a sire pedigree. He's one of 13 Grade 1 Stakes winners by the Top Sire and Bridle Song. His dam, a Grade 1 Stakes winner of some 894,000, is by the Great Seattle Slough. What's more, she's a half-sister to 2 proven sires of Grade 1 Stakes winners, Empire Maker and Chester House. First Crop Yearlings by First Defense sold for up to $165,000 this year. He stands for 7,500 live foal at Judmont Farm, home also the proven Grade 1 sire Mizzen Mass. Inquiries to Garrett O'Rourke or Aaron Fry, and see the website at judmont.com. Well, I want to talk a little bit, am I at the right place right here? Yeah, about my good friend, no, got to do Macaulay's first. Yeah, then we'll talk about Jim Fitzgerald. Talk about my good friends down at Macaulay Brothers. Last weekend at Gulfstream Park, the Harlan's Holiday Stakes was won by Trickmeister. Trickmeister was bred and raised by Brereton C. Jones, owner of Airdrie Stud, in partnership with Airdrie Stud farm manager Tim Thornton, two longtime associates of Macaulay Brothers, the first feed mill in the nation to produce products exclusively for the horse. This single-minded devotion to the horse is paying dividends. In 2011 alone, clients of Macaulay Brothers have raised the winners of 110 graded stakes and 24 individual Grade 1 stakes winners. So when the folks at Macaulay say that they count many of the world's finest horsemen among their clients, they mean just that. Macaulay's would also like to add you to their list of satisfied customers. Just contact Daryl Ward or Mike Warren at 873-3333 or stop by the office at 111 Broadway in Versailles. And Merry Christmas to you from Macaulay Brothers, where it's all about the horse. And Jim Fitzgerald, owner of Knott Griffin Farm and also of Harper's Island Farm, would also like to wish you a very Merry Christmas. Jim's farm is located over in Bourbon County. He's a neighbor of ours, and it's a great establishment there. Of course, he does boarding, sales prep. Public or private sales, doesn't make any difference. Rehabilitation, you name it. He's got quality help at both farms, and he can give you some good, sound, common sense advice. If you're in the horse business, you're not doing well, or if you're thinking about getting into the horse business, well, he's the man to talk to. Had a very successful sales during the September sales out of Keeneland. He sold yearlings to the likes of Kenny McPeak and West Point Thoroughbreds and BBA Ireland, Reynolds Bell Jr., Mike Pigram, Jerry Horlandorfer. They all come to see his sources because they know they've been raised right. That's Jim Fitzgerald at Knott Griffin Farm. Here's his phone number, 987-8032. And his website is Knott Griffin, KnockGriffin, farm.com.
Run, oh, Molly, run, run, oh, Molly, run. Jimbo's gonna beat you to the bright shining sun. Bright shining sun, bright shining sun.
That sounded a little gargle to me right there.
Worse than that.
Worse than that. All right, well, I bet it's just about time to go to our reading of Old Pastures, and we're going to see how, if it doesn't sound any better than that, well, we'll might have to do something. We'll have to redo it. But anyway, this was written back in about 1913 by John Tanner Foote, and it's a beautiful, beautifully written short story. So without further ado, this is Old Pastures by John Tanner Foote. Old Pastures by John Tanner Foote. There are certain recollections of my childhood which are vivid as the happenings of the hour. The events which are traced so indelibly on the earlier pages of my life may or may not have been worthy of record. Yet there they are, poignant, unblurred, defying time to erase them. Perhaps the clearest of all such italics of the past is the day on which I first saw harness racing. It was at the Lexington Trots, where I sat in my uncle's box, speechless, wide-eyed, blissful, for all one golden afternoon. On that day, the free-for-all pace was won after a bitter five-heat battle by a gray gilding with a smoky mottling on his neck and withers. Jogging back to town, the talk was all of sires and dams and bloodlines. I pulled my uncle by the sleeve, and when I had his attention at last, I asked him how the winner of the free-for-all was bred. "By Baron Wilkes, sonny," he told me. "First dam, Mayday, by Pilot Jr." That was many years ago. 20 years later, I spent the sum of $30, not to mention the expressage, on 1,100 pounds of live weight from Xenia, Ohio, to Lexington. And now I shall tell you how. I don't quite know why I did it. But first, let me say that Colonel Jack Menifee bore the consequences of my indiscretion for 4 long years. He swore a little, but never complained. Business had called me to Dayton. I found, when I was ready to return east, that my best train was the Pennsylvania Express, leaving Cincinnati at 7 that night, passing through Xenia at 9:20 and arriving in New York the following morning. To catch it, I must take an accommodation to Xenia, where I should wait 30 minutes for the flyer. I disliked the change in wait, but it was that or nothing, so a jerky, kerosene-lighted day coach served me to get to Xenia, and after depositing me on the station platform, creaked off into the night. It was not cold for so late in the fall, but I felt a sudden moisture on my face, and looking toward an electric light, I saw that it was beginning to snow, big, slow, feathery flakes. I made for the station, pushed open the waiting room door, and found the place hot to suffocation and filled with section hands who were smoking what seemed to be ground-up rubber overshoes. I backed out, holding my breath into the moist night air, which tasted of cinders, cold smoke, and lubricating oil, when I finally took a gulp of it, for which I was intensely grateful. Next, I looked about for a sheltered spot and a seat of some sort, for I'd had a hard day. In prowling about, I passed a lighted blackboard, on which was chalked casually the following bit of information. 9:20 east, 40 minutes late. I read this once, I read it again, and then the grimy station seemed to take on a stolid but malignant personality. I felt that its purpose was to make such time as must be passed in or near its hideous with discomfort. That beast of a one-eyed New York Express was also deep in conspiracy against me. I found my voice and mentioned the city of Xenia and the Pennsylvania Railroad earnestly and aloud. Somewhat relieved in spirit, I took up the burden of my bag, proceeded along the station front, and so came at last to an empty mail truck which would serve for a seat. The truck was sheltered by the overhanging roof of the station. There was little wind, if any, and I was warm enough in my heavy coat. I turned up my coat collar, settled down on the truck, and experienced a small glow of satisfaction. After all, this wasn't so bad, I thought. There were worse things than an hour's wait in the fresh air. I snuggled well into my coat and actually began to feel a sort of lazy contentment. There was a cab standing close to the platform. It was directly under an arc light, not more than 10 feet from where I sat. I could even catch a faint odor of stables and wet horsehair that came from the vehicle and the horse to which it was attached. He was a gaunt, gray gelding, turned to mouse color by the melting snow, which drifted down upon his unprotected back. He stood there moveless, as silent as the cab he drew, as silent as the silent falling snow. He seemed to dream. I noticed a peculiar smoky mottling on his ewe neck and bony withers. Where have I seen a horse mark like that before? I wondered, drowsily. Just then the cab horse coughed a windy cough, his harness rattling as he did so. Next, he unclosed his sunken near eye and rolled it at me in a friendly stare. "Good evening, sir," he said, in a deep and gurgling voice. I was curiously unsurprised. It seemed quite natural to be addressed by a cab horse. For some reason, I did not feel that the experience was out of the ordinary. I nodded to him and returned his greeting. "Good evening," I said, adding that it seemed to be snowing. The cab horse shook himself until the moisture sprayed from his coat and harness, cocked a humorous ear in my direction, and said with a rumbling chuckle, "I've observed it." "Of course," I said hastily, and there followed a silence in which I felt vaguely uncomfortable in my heavy coat and wondered why he had no blanket. He seemed to read my thoughts. "There was a time, sir," he said, and then I was in the full vigor of horsehood, "when an hour spent without covering under melting snow would have been not only a hardship, but a peril. In these later years, I have become accustomed to a somewhat different station in life, and I am now better able, both mentally and physically, to endure bodily comfort. I shall reach my quarters at, let us say, 2 o'clock. I shall seek my repose on a bed of sawdust, with my coat as full of moisture as you see it now. There may be a suggestion of stiffness tomorrow, but nothing that will prohibit me from undertaking my usual duties. And yet, sir, 15 years ago, although wearing a night blanket and sleeping in the abundance of rye straw, had I not been scientifically cooled out, I could not have paced a 30-clip without great effort the following morning." I looked at him with growing interest. "Cooled out?" I exclaimed. 30-clip? Were you equal to a 30-clip? Once more I heard the deep rumble of his chuckle. It ended in a fit of coughing which shook him from nostrils to tail root. "You will pardon me," he said with difficulty. "I mentioned a 30-clip disparagingly. It was a jog, sir, only a jog in those days. Are you, by any way, of being a horseman, sir?" "Somewhat," I admitted. "Then is it possible," he said with some eagerness, "that you have visited my native state?" "Kentucky, isn't it?" I inquired. A limpid glow shone for a moment in his eyes. "I was full 6 miles from Lexington, sir," he told me softly, "along the Georgetown Pike." "I know that country well," he said. "You've been there recently?" he asked. I nodded. "The trots, this year," I said. "The trots," he exclaimed. Then in a sort of hushed ecstasy he breathed again. "The trots." "You've seen the trots?" I asked. He stared away through the snowflakes into the night. Apparently he had not heard the question. At last he shook himself as though to be rid of his thoughts, champed reflectively on his rusty bit, and favored me with a slow and dreamy look. "Yes," he said, "I've seen the trots." Suddenly his head went up, his nostrils dilated, and his eyes blazed. "I raced in the free-for-all pace on that good track," he told me the year. Then he named that year, "with 20,000 of my people watching. My knees were big as baskets when I finished. I had cut my quarter to the bone, but I had kept a promise, sir, and seen a dream come true." "A promise?" I said curiously. "A promise," he repeated. "It was a personal matter, sir. I doubt if you could find it interesting." "Oh, but I should," I assured him. "I have an hour." The cab horse looked at me doubtfully for a moment. "Very well," he said. "If I seem garrulous, you must blame yourself, sir. I have reached the time in life when I may be suspected of that weakness." He paused, tossing his head stiffly to relieve his neck of check cramp, and shifted his weight to his off rear leg. "On the day I was foaled," he began, "my dam had 5 smooth-going trotters in the line. Then I came into the world, with a strong suggestion of curb and my off fore toe setting in quite noticeably. There were 40 good foals in pasture that year, and a bad leg one was particularly noticeable among them. My mother was a proud mare, and the condolences of the other matrons were distasteful to her. For this reason, she took to grazing by herself, and I seldom joined in games and capers with the other foals. When she had finished grazing, my mother's favorite spot was beneath a sassafras tree close to the white board fence along the Georgetown Pike. For hours we would stand there together, watching the pike. Along that pike, sir, we could see Kentucky's best, both horse and man, go by. I can close my eyes and see it now. I can rest my chin on the top board of the fence and see my people, sir, driving into Lexington or back. You have seen it lately, the Georgetown Pike?" "3 weeks ago, I said. 3 weeks ago, he repeated. "Tell me, sir, is it just the same? Do the mules poke along, their ears a-flapping, with corn and hemp and tobacco? Do they lead the runners past, mincing and fiddling under their blankets? Do the lovers drive by talking low and sweet when the pike's all white in the moonlight? Is it like that still? But I must get on, sir, I must get on. You have an hour, you said." On the east side of our pasture was a stone barn with a paddock leading down to the pike. The main drive separated the pasture from this paddock, but I had noticed an old brown stallion in the paddock who sometimes wandered down and looked out over the pike. He had never noticed my mother or me, never looked in our direction, but she seemed nervous and ill at ease when he was near. One day some gentlemen came driving by. When they saw the old brown stallion standing there, each man took off his old hat. I was astounded by this and asked my mother what it meant. "Why do men bow to that old horse like that?" I asked. My mother looked across the drive and lowered her voice. "Because," she said, "he is very old and very famous." "What makes him famous, Mammy?" I asked. "Hush," said my mother, "you wouldn't understand." From then on, I had a culture's curiosity about the old brown stallion. I hoped someday he'd tell me how to grow famous and have men bow to me. But weeks went by, and he never seemed to see me. Then one day, some horses were led down the drive under blankets. As they went through the gates, my mother nickered to one of them, and he replied, "Good luck, son," my mother called after him. "Remember, whatever happens, stay on the trot." "Yes, ma'am," he called back to her. "I've only made 2 breaks this year." My mother watched those horses, sir, until she could no longer see them. "That was your half-brother," she said to me. "He's going away to the races." "When shall I go to the races, Mammy?" I asked. My mother glanced at my crooked legs and sighed. "Your duties will lie elsewhere, my child," she said. At this, I lost my temper and began to kick the fence. My small hoofs set up such a clatter on the broad boards that the old stallion, who was standing just across the drive, raised his head and looked over at me. "Hoity-toity," he said. I was too enraged to notice him just then. "I will go to the races," I squealed, banging away at the fence. "And why shouldn't he go, madam?" said the old stallion to my mother. "Because, sir," faltered my mother, "he has bad legs, both in front and behind." The old stallion looked at me for a moment while I continued to pelt away at the fence. "Stop those didos and listen to me, young man," he said, and my deportment improved instantly. "Do you want to race some day?" he asked me. "Yes, sir, if you please, sir," I answered. "Well, keep a-trying," he said. "Keep a-trying. It's more his heart than his legs that makes a racehorse. Just keep a-trying. Never discourage the young," he said to my mother. "Take him away now, madam. He's disturbing my thoughts." "Who is that old fossil?" I asked my mother, when she had led me further down the fence. My mother stared in horror at me for a moment, and then said, with ears laid back, "That is your grandsire, you impertinent whippersnapper," she said. "His name is George Wilkes." When I folded my crooked legs under me that night, I remembered what my grandsire had said. Before I went to sleep, I repeated it aloud. "Keep a-trying, keep a-trying," I said. I fell asleep mumbling those words, and I awoke next morning determined to bear them in mind. From that day to this, sir, they have been my creed. Although at times I have doubted their potency, I have never quite despaired. "It cost you a dollar to attend the trots, did it not, sir?" he paused inquiringly. "No," I said. "It was more than that." The cab horse chuckled. "The fortune of war, sir," he said. "But you need not have wagered unless you saw fit to do so. You could have seen the trots for a dollar each day." I nodded. "It cost me," said the cab horse, 5 years of toil, 5 years of struggle. It was not expected that I would ever race. It was hoped that I could take a standard record. That was all. But every day of those 5 years I kept a trying. And now, with the fuller knowledge that has come to me, I know that the horse who keeps a trying is a hard horse to beat. My training began on the farm when I was a 3-year-old. My gait was nothing in particular, but because my mother was a dam of trotters, they trained me at the trot. I wore every boot in the catalog and hit them all at some place in the mile. Never a stride did I take that was not labored. Never a mile did I go that did not seem like 3. But always, sir, always I tried. For every foot of every mile I tried, with the sweat running over my hoofs. And what was the hardest to bear was the easy way good-gaited colts slipped past me. There was one black pacer, Rising 4, whose workout days matched mine. He was sired by that great horse Director, and frequently alluded to the fact. But if you asked him who his granddam was, he changed the subject. He had a reaching, sneaky, oily gait and a heart as black as his hide. Whenever he caught me struggling home, I got a scornful word flung back from the wind of his passing. I grew to hate him for the trash he was, and in my dreams I beat him. But morning found me eating dust and trying, only trying. One day when I had lost all hope and was the joke of the farm, the silent man come up from Tennessee, and every colt on the place was stepped an eighth with him a-watching. I had never heard of him at that time, sir, but from the way the people looked at him and rolled their eyes, I felt ashamed when my turn came to hip and hop and jiggle past him. When it was over, I tried to shy through the gate and so get quickly to my stall, but our head trainer, who had driven me, pulled me round and drove me back to where the silent man was standing. "Pop," said our trainer, "we'd like to give that colt a mark. What's wrong with him?" The silent man was flicking at the track with a whip. He never looked up, just watched the marks the whiplash was making in the dust. "He wants to pace," he said, and those words made a racehorse. Those words and the creed, sir, those words and the creed. "Pace," said our trainer, "his dam's old Mayday. He's got no license to pace." The silent man kept a flicking at the track. "Well, suit yourself, doggone it," he said. "He'll pace, James, or fall down." Next day, they knocked my toe weights off and put more weight behind. And 3 weeks later, sir, I paced a mile in 28 and was mentioned in a complimentary manner by the Lexington leader. I was still rough-gaited, even on the pace, and at top speed I hit my knees. But now, by trying, always trying, a little power was added to my stroke each day. A little hope grew slowly in my breast. And then one morning, the black coat by director caught me at the eighth pole and turned out to go by. I have fought out heats by inches in my day, sir, but never did I do more than from that eighth pole home. The black coat was only a length in front when we passed under the wire. He laughed a sneering, irritating sort of laugh he had when we were jogging back. "You step on the back of your neck some day," he said, "and break it." I hit my knees so hard that day that they were puffed already, and both my quarter bones were cut to the ribbons. "I'll step on your yellow heart some day," I said, "and break it." I spoke in the heat of youthful passion, an ill-considered boast. He had a dazzling flight of speed, and who was I to promise him a beating? He was shipped away shortly after that, and word came back that he was doing well. But something told me he was weak inside. A racing grand dam comes in handy at the pinch, sir. Yes, and for more like her. I stayed behind and worked the summer through. For days I hung at 27. Then cut a second off, and needed just 1 second more to be a standard pacer. Lord, help us how I tried, sir. A week, 2 weeks went by. Then one fine day, the farm track dried out good and fast, and I came home in 23, with a trainer grinning and my swipe cutting capers at the wire. They sent me to a breeders' meeting at Lexington. There weren't 200 people in the stands that day, and on the track was Rag and Tag and Bobtail, cripples, failures, not fit to race, with bands of playing and thousands looking on. But it was Lexington. I made a clumsy effort against time, a mile and 20, and my mother had another in the list. That night I stood and dreamed of looking out the window of my stall at the big track and the moon and the grandstand and the stables. A gamecock crowed, a hound dog bayed, and then the stand filled up with misty shapes. I thought I saw my people, sir, by thousands. They'd come along the pikes, as still as shadows. Then, sir, I saw a field of horses scoring for the word. They got away. A black horse was a streaking, oily stride, a length in front, and round the track they swept without a sound. The black horse led down the stretch, and then a gray horse caught him and beat him by head. The gray horse, sir, was me. I stood and sweat and trembled for an hour looking out that window. When morning came, they drove me home and turned me out again. A gray colt, sir, with crooked legs and visions in his head. Next spring, my gait became a trifle smoother. By June, I pounded out a mile and 14 flat. And though my eyes were popping from my head, sir, when I finished, it got me to the races. When that year closed, I'd come to my full speed. Not the extreme flight that smooth-going horses own for some place in the mile, but what I had, I gave from wire to wire. And I have beaten, in my time, some high-class pacers, sir. So 4-5 years on 50 different tracks, I bore the creed in mind. And then one summer day, as I have told you, sir, I jogged out when they call the free-for-all at Lexington. That day, sir, and how it come back, the band of playing in a blue Kentucky sky smiling down on me and mine. That's how it seemed to me, on me and mine, for one in every five in that big stand had driven in along the Georgetown Pike. I had scored past the grandstand and was turning to jog back when one of the starters in the free-for-all came scoring down close to the pole. He was a black horse, sir, low-headed, with a reaching, oily stride, and I forgot the music in the crowds. He recognized me when we were turning for the word and spoke to me right friendly. "Glad to see you, mighty glad," he said. "Ain't you flying high these days?" He laughed his same old irritating laugh, and I remembered how I used to hate him when he'd catch me floundering in the farm track stretch. He won the first heat by a length. A brown Hal mare was second. I was third. I paced the mile at my best clip and never reached them. The black horse won the next heat by a length again, and I was second. I'd paced my heart out clean from wire to wire, but he was fast, sir. He was mighty fast. Then for the third time we scored down and went away. But those two heats had dulled him some, sir, and at the half I lapped his sulky wheel. He seemed to move along without an effort, though, and I was pacing deaf and dumb and blind. I felt I could not see his head come back to mine. By inches, sir, by inches it was coming back. I did not know when we had passed the wire. I did not know who had won the heat. I did not know that I had hit my knees and cut my quarter, sir. The world turned black. Then presently the call boy came to the paddock and called the first three names, and people gathered at my stall, sir, for I had won the heat. For one more heat the black horse set his speed, sir. For one more heat it took up my all to win. But when I did, although once more I did not know what happened until the call boy came and called the names. Then in the fifth and final heat, with 20,000 of my people looking on, sir, I kept the promise I had made the black horse long before and broke his heart. We went the first half of the mile in sixth, and then his eyes began to roll. I came the last half in a minute flat, pushed out by the brown Hal mare, who had been laying up. The black horse finished last. "And so, sir," said the cab horse in conclusion, "I saw my dream come true." "Do you believe," he was stricken with a fit of coughing, "in dreams?" he managed to say. "Why, no," I said doubtfully. "I can't say that I do. Do you have them often?" The cab horse gazed at me steadily for a moment. "Dreams," he said, "belong to youth. They fled, sir, long ago. And yet a sort of daydream still remains, a sort of faith, a sort of hope, a wild, preposterous hope." "Hope?" I inquired. "I cherish a hope," said the cab horse, "that some day I will return to the land from which I sprang. I will see the blue grass, ankle deep, gray and crisp with dew. I will hear the brood mares calling to the little, little colts, and the stallions stamp and holler in the paddocks. The people will whistle and shuffle and sing in the sunshine. The old will moan and croon when the moon comes up over the big black barns. And I can pick a mouthful now and then right close to the fence, sir, right close to the fence along the Georgetown Pike." The gurgling voice died away in a huge, moist sigh. Its owner gazed at the ground before him. His ancient head sank lower. His knees seemed to sag with his weight. Someone began to shake me, none too gently, while requesting me to let him have a truck. "Truck?" I said thickly. "What truck?" "You're sitting on it," came a bellow in my ear, and I found myself gazing into the countenance of a red-whiskered man who was peering at me from below the visor of an official-looking cap. "Oh, excuse me," I said. "I was thinking." The red-whiskered man grinned. "You were snoring," he said. "I never snore," I said coldly. "Give him in the truck." I devoted the next 5 minutes to staring at the cab horse standing under the arc light in the falling snow. He stood there moveless, as silent as the cab he drew, as silent as the silent falling snow. He seemed to dream. Of course he didn't talk, I decided flatly. It's simple enough. I was asleep. I heard the whistle of the New York Express a moment later, and presently the track rails turned to molten silver under its flaming eye. While the porter examined my birth check, I continued to stare at the cab. I could not take my eyes from the smoky mottling on his neck and withers. Where, oh where, had I seen that marking before? Just as the train began to move, it flashed over me. I had a vision of a wildly happy child, his cheeks flaming, his small fist clenched, as he watched a lean gray head creep past a black one to the tune of drumming hoofs. Why, I was there, I burst out. I saw him do it. I tore my bag from the astonished porter and leaped, almost fell, to the station platform of Xenia, Ohio. At 10 o'clock the next morning, I sent a telegram. It was addressed to Colonel Jack Menifee, Hillendale Farm, Lexington, Kentucky. It read, "Am shipping you by express one gray gilding. Please turn him out in the East Meadow along the Georgetown Pike."
To succeed at the races, you need an advantage. That edge is Brisket.com. Racing's number one website has the value-added information no one else has. In-depth trainer stats, detailed pedigree data, risk, class, pace, and speed ratings, free membership, handicapping contests, exciting monthly giveaways. For a true picture of how the race will be run, discover Brisket.com, the official data source of the Kentucky Derby.
Well, Leah's son, winner last Saturday, the Grade 1 $750,000 Clash Call Futurity, is just the most recent in a long list of superior runners sired by the late Indian Charlie. Indian Charlie was one of 63 stakes winners sired by In Excess. In Excess won the Grade 1 Whitney, the Grade 1 Suburban, the Grade 1 Woodward, and the Grade 1 Metropolitan. In Excess, too, is gone. But the sire line lives. Another of In Excess of 63 stakes winners is the multiple graded stakes winner, Notional, standing at Spendthrift Farm for $7,500, doing the foal stands and nurses. Notional won the Grade 2 San Rafael Stakes at Santa Anita. He won the Grade 3 Risen Star Stakes at the Fairgrounds, and he ran second to Scat Daddy in the Grade 1 Florida Derby as a three-year-old. The next year, he won the Grade 3 Salvatore Mile at Monmouth Park, and he was also precocious at two, breaking his maiden at Santa Anita in 109 flat, and placing in the Grade 3 Hollywood Preview Stakes. He earned $733,240. Notional covered 110 mares in 2010, 101 in 2011, and his first crop yearling sold for up to $90,000 this year. Your inspection is invited at Spendthrift Farm. Inquiries to Ken Wilkins, Des Dempsey, Sean Fell, or Ned Toffee, and see the website at SpendthriftFarm.com.
The horse right here, the name is Paul Revere, and here's a guy that says if the weather's clear, can do.
All righty.
To dry your tears?
Yeah.
That's such a wonderful
story. Boy, that could write. That guy could write. He could.
Yeah.
Almost as good as Joe Palmer.
Yeah. It's
in different. In their way, there's a different style.
Yes.
But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed doing it. All righty.
You got to do a Joe Palmer? Have you got time to do a Joe Palmer for Christmas?
I want to do another rescue.
Yes,
another rescue. I can do the Gas House Gang again.
Oh, yeah, do the Gas House Gang. You got 7 minutes.
All righty.
Plus a commercial.
All righty, okay. Well, then, this is another rescue story, and it's called the Gas House Gang. I've done this several times on the air, but what the heck, Joe Palmer's always worth repeating. Well, the records say that Jolly Roger earned $143,240, which is woefully incomplete. He was a great steeplechaser in an era of great steeplechasers, and he won the Grand National at Belmont under 165 pounds in 1927, and he won it again the next year under 167. He ran for Mrs. Payne Whitney, which was a good thing for a horse, and after he left the races in 1930, he went back to the paddocks of Green Tree Farm to grow old gracefully with the world's record for earnings by chaser. Mrs. Whitney did not know it, but Jolly Roger's earning days weren't over. A good many tourists from Iowa and Maine and Kansas get to Green Tree every year, and, of course, they want to see famous horses. There were some children on the farm, owned by some of the resident employees, and they found this situation interesting. Want to see St. Germans, they'd ask, a questionnaire. If they found the visitors knew little enough, they'd offer Man of War, or for that matter, Eclipse. Whatever the choice, one of the youngsters would run out and catch old Jolly Roger, who was a very flashy horse with a blaze face and four white stockings, and he could be led by a child with a silk string. The act was always good for a quarter or a half dollar, and Jolly Roger was probably shown as much as any horse in Kentucky, though never under his own name. Presently, to share his paddocks came Cherry Pie, which was one of Mrs. Whitney's best-loved horses, and then 20 grand, with his record for the Derby. And there was the Easter Hero, finally, to make a fourth. The farm staff, lamentably, addicted to baseball, broadcast in season, called them the Gas House Gang. You won't recall Easter Hero because he raced over the fences in England. He was good enough, but his fame rests largely with the way he played Merry Hell with the field of the Aintree Grand National in 1928. This was a notorious renewal in which 42 horses started and only the 100-to-1 shot Temporary Tim finished undamaged, although the American entry, Billy Barton, was remounted after pecking the last jump and finished second. No others finished at all, largely because of Easter Hero. He hit the canal turn fence, but instead of going over, landed astraddle of it. Billy Barton, too close to turn out, cleared fence, ditch, and Easter Hero in one prodigious leap, but several others fell and more refused. Easter Hero finally fell back off the fence into the ditch on the near side, where he ran up and down for a while nothing behind would attempt to jump at all. This cut the field to a half a dozen or so, and Aintree's murderous fences took care of most of the few which had got over. 20 grand had won the Derby in 1931 in track record time, sweeping down the stretch with a prodigious rush. He was later tried and stud, but proved incurably sterile. There was an attempt to train him again. He ran in the first Santa Anita handicap in 1935. But this didn't work very well either, so he was brought back to the farm and turned out with the other pensioners. It would be nice to think that these four old warriors remembered their days of glory and argued during the hot summer afternoons about whether steeplechasing was honest, though the chances are they didn't. But at least they had the big paddocks and the tall grass and their own company and long years of idleness. As the years passed, their reputations were largely forgotten. There's always been plenty of horses better than Cherry Pie. Whirlaway broke 20 grand's Derby record with an even more spectacular rush. Many another horse came down at Aintree to the detriment of the field behind. But year after year, Jolly Roger held to his record. No other steeplechaser had ever earned so much as he. But faster than racehorses runs the white horse. Cherry Pie was the first to go. He died in 1947. At the age of 27. In February 1948, Easter Hero rose to his last fence. And then, a month later, 20 grand came to the end of his days at the age of 20. This left Jolly Roger, an aging 26, as a lonely survivor. In all the years since he had left the fences, his record had remained virtually the only money record except Top Flight's, which had withstood the big purses of the 1940s. Then on July 2, Elkridge, 10-year-old veteran of 1,000 fences, shook off the field of the Indian River steeplechase at Delaware Park and with a purse of $8,800 set a new steeplechasing mark for earnings. On July 3, the Gas House Gang was disbanded. Jolly Roger died at Green Tree. All righty, I've got one more spot to do. How much time do I have left there? Oh, great, working out fine. Fahan, a two-time winner in Great Britain, is being pointed toward the major three-year-old stakes this year. He's from the first crop by Jazzle, so is the multiple winner Compressor and Churchill Downs winner Perdido, and most recently DeSizzle, a front-running maiden special winner at Turfway on December 16th. To date, Jazzle has 9 first crop two-year-olds to win a place, and like their sire, they're going to improve with a distance of ground. Jazzle did break his maiden at 2, but then he went on to win Grade 1 stakes at 3. He won the classic Grade 1 Belmont Stakes, won a fast closing second in the Grade 1 Wood Memorial, and a closing fourth in the Kentucky Derby for earnings of over $890,000. His half-sister, Rags to Riches, also won the Belmont Stakes. His dam was a graded stakes winner and a broodmare of the year. His second dam won the classic Kentucky Oaks and was a multiple graded producer and grand dam of a champion. His third dam was yet another broodmare of the year. Dazzle is a classic performer with a classic pedigree, siring two-year-olds that can run. So watch for them in 2012. Stands at Shadwell Farm for 7,500 live foal. Inquiries to stallion manager Ken Barnes and see the website at shadwellfarm.com. Well, this reminder now, next week, basketball, we will be on from 9 till 11. 9 till 11 next week, Louisville's playing. And talk to you next week, and thanks for listening.